greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on war when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist these evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our private property by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property. It's not vested in the Congress, and it's not vested in our political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for example, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto, because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or solicitor, and it is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. Unquote. That comes from U.S. versus Johnson. And that's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and listen a whole lot less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, and in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Can't beat that. Entertaining, educational, informative, and free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the economics of war. War is a penalty. It's a punishment that we suffer for the violation of law. And there's 5 statutes in the Bible that deal with war. 5 statutes. There's a way to go to war. There's a way to conduct a war. President Bush should have been conducting the war in Iraq based upon these 5 laws, 5 standards, 5 statutes set down by the law, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses. He didn't do that. Now you're bogged down in a war that General Douglas MacArthur had an observation when he said that our country is now geared to an arms economy. I mentioned that to you last time. There's more money in war than there is in peace. In the same way that there's more money in sickness and disease than there is in vitamins and minerals. You know, if I sold you a package of vitamins over here and prevented your heart attack, I'd get $40. But if I leave you alone and let you develop a heart attack, I can give you a Roto-Rooter job, you know, a bypass surgery job, and charge you $100,000. Now, there's never going to be a cure to heart attack, stroke, and cancer. You can forget that. That isn't going to happen. And if you think there's going to be peace on planet Earth, you can forget that. That isn't going to happen. As long as there's profit, there's going to be war. As long as there's money to be made, there's going to be sickness and disease. Now, if you take the financial incentive out of it, if you take the profit out of war, you won't have any more war. You take the profit out of disease and you won't have any more disease. Or if you have disease, you won't have the medical establishment to take your money away from you. So when MacArthur said our country is now geared to an arms economy bred in an artificially induced psychosis of war hysteria and an incessant propaganda of fear. Every night on the news, President Bush says, I'm just protecting the American people. I'm here to protect the American people. Why, we got these terrorists out here and I got to protect the American people. Hell, that's what it was. That was what it was all about back in the Korean War, back in MacArthur's day, back in the Cold War days. They were selling us the Cold War. They were selling us nuclear Armageddon for the profit of Lockheed Martin and Boeing aircraft. Worked like a shot. We spent $1 trillion when money was worth something, fighting the Cold War, you know, keeping the Russians at bay. So MacArthur understood it, and this guy Smedley Butler, he understood it. The American people don't. They haven't got a clue. Not a clue. And when the president says we got to go to war with Iran, they'll line up. I mean, you know, but they got to fabricate something. So what they'll do is they'll fabricate some kind of an incident like Pearl Harbor. No, the American people aren't going to go to war with Iran because the president says, hey, listen, we're short of oil this month. Let's go take it from the Iranians. That isn't going to fly. That isn't the way wars are done. You got to have a provocation. Like 9/11, Pearl Harbor, the sinking of the Lusitania. Remember the Maine. I mean, you got to have something. The shots fired on Fort Sumter. Then once that provocation comes down, the president jumps up and says, my God, our honor is at stake. We can't take this from a bunch of ragheads over in Iran, jumping up and down and doing this or that or something else to us, you know. And so, you know, then the American young boys, they'll just line up trying to join the army so they can go over there and deal a blow for democracy. It's the way it's always been in the past. What makes you think it's going to change in the future? But I thought, you know, maybe we ought to look at this a little more pragmatically, you know, so don't send me a letter now and say, hey, now listen, Gordon, you're one of these anti-war pacifists. The name Gordon is synonymous with blood. And that's why the Gordon Highlanders are in the British Army to this day. No, the Gordons spill blood, and we always have. The Gordons are very militaristic. The Gordon clan is made up of trained professional killers. So there's no pacifists, and there aren't any anti-war Gordons that I've ever heard of. I mean, we come from the Vikings. We're the guys that were out here raping your women, robbing you of everything you have, and stealing your children from you. We didn't have any qualms about rape, rob, and pillage. Not a Gordon, not to my knowledge. Not a Scotsman. Not a Zero Line descendant of Judah. But, you know, we like to be a little more pragmatic. I mean, I don't mind going out here raping, robbing, and pillaging, but, you know, even the Arabs are getting 70 virgins. And I don't want to settle for some snaggletooth slut from the Blue Room, for crying out loud. If my enemies over here are going to get 70 virgins, we ought to at least get some foxy chick out of this, or get some money out of this, or get something. Halliburton's doing well. Bechtel's doing well. But what are we getting? You know, us Joe Sixpacks out here driving the trucks and making the houses and doing the work out here. What are we getting out of this war? So here's Douglas MacArthur. He says, now listen, you've got this country geared to an arms economy. That's where the money's at. That's why you're spending $500 billion a year. That's where the money's at. And then every once in a while, you got to burn up those arms. I mean, you got to shoot off some bombs and you got to make some money over here, because what's the purpose in having all these weapons if you can't use them for profit and gain? Profit and gain. Now, the businessmen make a lot of money, and then those of us, the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives down here at the bottom of the totem pole, get to do all the work, pay the taxes, and go fight and bleed for the aristocrats like Ken Lay, you know. And I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, I don't mind going out and fighting and bleeding, but I want a little bit of the booty too. And I don't see that we're getting this trickle-down effect, you know, the Republicans keep talking about. So I got to wondering, I said, well, how would God handle this? You know, if God was in the White House. You ever stop and think about that? What if the God of Abraham was sitting in the White House today instead of George Bush? What would our foreign policy be like in Iraq? Well, how would we conduct the war in Iraq? What would our policy be in Afghanistan? Would we go in there and kick ass and then leave, or would we stay and sign treaties and make deals? Would we be growing opium poppies? What would our policy be? You ever thought about that? And how do you get peace? Has there ever been a time when we had peace? And if you have peace and then war follows peace, how come you got the war? Was it a curse because of something that happened? Have you ever muddled through that and tried to ask yourself, well, how come we got cursed with the Civil War or with World War I and World War II? Is it just those dirty Jews and capitalist bankers and communists and all these bad guys out here? Or is there some other cause that brings this war thing up front, up to the fore? Well, in the Bible, there's a neat book called Judges. It's a book of war. It's just one war after another. You get war, and then you get a little peace, and you get war, and you get a little peace. But it tells us a story, and it tells us why you get war and why you have peace. It tells you where peace comes from and where war comes from. It's kind of like disease, you know. I've said, you got disease, well, then you broke a law. You got war, then you broke a law. Law is the guideline, it's the rule by which we live our lives. And when you violate that law, there has to be a penalty. And if there's no penalty, you don't have a law, you have a suggestion. Now, the laws of the Bible are not suggestions. Those are absolute guides, and if you violate them, there's a penal clause. The penal clause is explained in Deuteronomy 28. Hey, one of the penalties that you get is war. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 spells it out for you in spades. And over here in the book of Judges, it gives us a number of wars and a number of periods of peace that we can look at and get some instruction from. Now, you don't have to read very far into Judges before you realize certain formulas appear again and again. A section will begin, quote, "The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Eternal," and then it follows one of the pagan nations oppressed and its oppression of Israel. And then God raised up a deliverer, someone that he empowered by his Spirit to lead the Israelite men to war. Peace comes. But then the formula repeats itself again and again and again. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Eternal. Well, let's just apply it now to the Middle East. How about you Jews over there? Are you doing evil in the eyes of the Eternal? Are you people practicing the Ten Commandments and the laws of God? I mean, you keep the Sabbath pretty well. Heck, you even do some of the holy days, or at least observe them. But you know, you got 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, and you people have had nothing but war from 1948 on. I don't call that a blessing. I think you're entitled to some blessings over there, don't you? So if God took over, instead of, you know, Ariel Sharon or Olmert over here, what if you had the God of Moses sitting there in Tel Aviv running the show? How would you conduct the war up there in Lebanon? How would God direct and conduct the operation down in Gaza or over in the West Bank? What would the Israeli policy be if God was your God and God was directing your operation for him? He used to do that, you know. One time, you guys had him on your team. I'm not so sure that he's working for you now. And then you Arabs over there, you got Allah working for you. Now, assuming that this Allah guy is, in fact, the God of Moses, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and you've got the real living God over here, well, then how would God, if he was running the war, running the insurgency over there in Iraq, how would he deal with the Americans? If he was behind Hezbollah, how would he deal with the Israelis? What would be his foreign policy? what would be his war strategy? Well, this same God says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever, and I change not. Now, that's quite a statement. It's what we call in law the doctrine of stare decisis. It's, I don't change. You know, I was like this years ago, and I'm still like this today. And I want to point out that this God here in the Bible, he's a little different dude than the average Joe Sixpack God that you see down here in the local Baptist church or Lutheran church. I mean, this guy is meaner than a junkyard dog. And I'm gonna read you a couple, three stories out here. I mean, you read this book of Judges, and then you just ask yourself, if this guy was sitting in the White House, we'd have a different foreign policy. And then you people that are raking in, you know, your profits off of Bechtel and Halliburton and Microsoft and Boeing and Lockheed Martin, and you people would be sad. Of course, that's why we don't have God in the White House, and that's because, you know, you people wouldn't have him, you know, if you could get him free of charge. The old adage, you know, you people would complain if we hung you with a new rope. So let's just take a minute and ask the obvious question. What evil were they doing? What was it that these people in Israel were doing? Well, simply put, they were worshiping the gods of the pagans, not the true God of Israel. Now, worship is obedience to your God's laws. So we worship here in the United States, the laws of the United States. We worship Congress. We've got an idol called the Statue of Liberty. We sing the Star Spangled Banner. We cross our hearts and salute smartly for the Star Spangled Banner, the Statue of Liberty. Those are idols. God told us not to do that. He told us that in the first and second commandments, coming right out of the chute. He says, you know, you people ought not to have these idols over here, and it's going to tick me off if you do. In our tolerant modern age, that sounds like a minor thing today. I mean, everybody does it. So what's the big deal? Wasn't one God as good as another? No one in the ancient world looked at it that way, and certainly the more moral among the Israelites didn't see it that way. There was only one God, the God of Abraham, the moral and the good ruler of all things. The gods of the pagans were false gods to be abhorred. You know, the gods of Washington, Oregon, and California were to be abhorred. And the concepts of worshiping, the concepts of obeying and bowing down to and buckling your seatbelt and driving 55 and registering your gun, those were abominations, for crying out loud. We didn't do that in America before we adopted this democracy crap that we're now exporting to you Iraqis over there. And a more important thing is the pagans were usually people of low morals. The pagans were people of low morals, like the Americans today. People that watch MTV and Warner Brothers, Channel 31. In fact, the worship of pagans and pagans' gods often involved child sacrifice. Today in America, we don't call it child sacrifice, we call it abortion. We call it birth control. And then ritual orgies. You know, we call these bathhouses, and we call it the gay lifestyle. And then other abominations. Other abominations, like, you know, going to war against people and stealing their oil. So when Judges says that the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Eternal, we can assume the people's morals were seriously slipping. Fighting the pagans meant not only getting rid of the oppressors, but also getting rid of the pagan influence of people whose religion and morals were corrupting the people of Israel. Well, here in America, we've brought in every religion. We brought you Muslims over here. We brought all you Indians over here, and with your Hindu religion and your Muslim religion, we got every religion. We got Buddha over here. Hey, what do you think our God thinks about that? You ever stop and think about, what does the God of Abraham think about Buddha, Allah, and Shinto, and Confucius? Well, we learn in Judges 3, that's Judges chapter 3, that the Israelites cried out to the Eternal, and he gave them a deliverer. His name was Ehud. He was a left-handed fellow. A left-handed, verse 15. Was it that important, mentioning that he was left-handed? Well, indeed it was. It just so happened at this stage of history that Israel's oppressor was the nearby nation of Moab. which had formed a coalition with the Ammonites and the Amalekites. And so for 18 years, Moab's king, a guy by the name of Eglon, had oppressed Israel. Being under the thumb of Moab meant that Israel had to send Eglon tribute. That is, a large sum of money or goods to appease the oppressor. No tribute meant the slaughter would follow. So Ehud, the left-handed deliverer, went off to Eglon with the tribute payment. Eglon got more than he bargained for. Now Ehud had made a double-edged sword about a foot and a half long, which he strapped to his right thigh under his clothes. He presented the tribute to Eglon, the king of Moab, who was a very fat man. Been eating a lot of McDonald's, evidently. We read that in Judges 3, verses 16 and 17. Now Ehud came in and he paid the tribute respectfully. We call that the income tax here in this country. And then he told Eglon that he had a secret message for him. So the king sent his own attendants away, and he and Ehud were alone in the palace. So Ehud approached unto the king with these words. He said, "I have a message from God for you," in verse 20. So Eglon was very excited about getting a message from God, something that he was expecting that was going to be very pleasant. But instead, Ehud reached with his left hand and drew the sword from his right thigh and then plunged it into the fat king's belly. Even the handle sank in after the blade, which came out of his back. Ehud did not pull the sword out, and the fat closed in over it. So let's note here that Ehud's sword was a foot and a half long. So when the account says that Eglon was a very fat man, we know it was true. And note also that Ehud's left-handedness was an advantage, since most men are right-handed. Eglon was not expecting Ehud to draw a sword from his right thigh, and Ehud had carried out his sneak attack on the corpulent king beautifully. He was a terrorist. God sent a terrorist into the king's midst and murdered him in cold blood, sent by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Oh my God, that ain't John Wayne now. Well, he also covered his escape very craftily. He locked the door of the room and he escaped by another entrance. The servants that had been sent away began to fret over the king, and after a long wait, they unlocked the door and they found the chubby corpse lying on the floor, and Ehud, the attacker, was long gone. Now, he wasted no time blowing a trumpet and rallying the men of Israel to rise up and take advantage of the death of Moab's leader. Israel's army struck down 10,000 Moabites, and the land had peace for 80 years, Judges 3:30. A pleasant ending to a rather gruesome story. So they got 80 years of peace. Well, then what happened after 80 years? Well, then we go back to, and the people displeased the Eternal. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of God. And then they went back into national captivity for 40 years. And then God would raise up another leader, and he'd come out there and deliver them from their oppressors. And then they would have peace for a period of time, 80 years. And then they would do evil in the sight of the Eternal. Now, you Israelites over there in Palestine, are you guys doing evil in the sight of the Eternal, the God of Abraham? I just thought I'd ask you the question, because, you know, you guys have had nothing but war over there. From 1948 on, you guys were having war over there long before 1948, but I'm just pointing out that, you know, for the last 50 years, you know, we've had nothing but war. That doesn't sound like a blessing to me. Now, of course, it's a blessing if you've got stock in Lockheed Martin, but, you know, it's a curse if you're out there getting shot and you're the guy that's doing the dying and the bleeding. And you want to remember that death is kind of final. I want to point that out to you. Death gets to be real final. That guy in the corpse, you know, like my Uncle Lyle, when we buried him over in Sunset Memorial, that was his last ride. Lyle has not been riding around much since then. That was back in 1981. All right, so did you get that? Now, Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he's a bloody guy. In fact, he even says that he's the God of war. It says that I believe it's Exodus 15, about verse 3. See if that's right. See if I can find Exodus 15, verse 3 here. There's a song sang about him, you know, after the battle. Actually, it wasn't much of a battle. It was the Red Sea crossing. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Yeah, the God of Abraham is a man of war. Now, you've heard about sweet Jesus away in the manger. You know, and sweet Jesus and love and peace. You know, they're always crying out, peace, peace, when there is no peace. You ever notice that? This guy is—he's not really the God of peace. He's the God of war. Now, I know that's a shock to you Christians out there, but then you know you Christians don't read the Bible. You read your catechism and you read books about the Bible, but when it gets right down to reading the scriptures themselves, I don't find very many Christians doing that. And there's another part of the story. In Matthew 19, verse 16, a guy came up to him one day and he said, "Hey, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life?" And so Jesus, you know, sweet Jesus, he told him. He didn't stutter. He just said, "Hey, well, let me tell you the answer to that." The story is over here in Matthew chapter 19, verse 16, where it says, "Behold, one came and said to him, 'Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life?' And he said to him, 'Well, why do you call me good? There isn't any good but God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments.'" Jesus called God good. This is the God of Ehud, you know, the guy that stuck it to that fat king, the terrorist, you know, Ehud, the terrorist. Samson, he was a terrorist. I told you that story not too long back. I said, you know, that guy, Samson over there, depends on which side you're fighting for as to whether he's a patriot fighting for freedom and liberty or whether he's a tyrant and a terrorist. It's all in the eyes of the beholder. See, over in Iraq, Bush is the terrorist. In fact, there's a book written back in 2000, about 6 years ago. It's called America, the Rogue Nation. America, the Rogue Nation. See, we're sitting over here with our 12,000 nukes, and we call North Korea a rogue nation. We call Iran a rogue nation. See? Those guys over there, they're looking at us, and they're saying, "Well, no, it's not us. It's the Americans that are a rogue nation." It's this division of opinion that is the spark of war. Well, anyway, he goes on, he says, he said unto him, "Well, which?" And Jesus said, "Well, you shall do no murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, and honor your father and your mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So Jesus was pretty plain about it. He explained to guys, said, now keep the commandments. So I just thought I'd ask you Israelis over there, are you keeping the commandments? You Americans, are you keeping the commandments? Now, this war over in Iraq, you know, it started off beautifully. I mean, it went like clockwork. It was shock and awe. And you got to give credit to George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, they were the architects of the war. That war just went like a clock. It just went perfectly. Now, 3 years later, we take a look at the war in Iraq. And that war ain't going none too good, is it? The ultimate end of the war in Iraq is the defeat of the United States. That's the ultimate end of it. Just like the war in Vietnam, the ultimate end of it was the defeat of the United States. Just like the war in Korea, the ultimate end of the war in Korea was the defeat of the United States. Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but boys and girls, we Israelites have done evil in the sight of the Eternal. And this war over there is the punishment that we're suffering for it. So, I wanted to give you some of these war quotations, you know, from guys like General MacArthur. Here's a neat war quotation from Albert Einstein. He made a couple of really neat statements. He said, "I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones." Now, I think he was referring to nuclear war. Did you know that the God of Abraham refers to nuclear war in the scripture. Yeah, we're going to have some nukes over here in the United States. And it's not going to be pleasant. This Albert Einstein also said you cannot simultaneously prevent and prepare for war. Now, here we Americans are preparing for war. We spend more money on war than on any other activity in America. The biggest slice of the American budget is war, defense. $500 billion a year. I mean, we spend more for that than we do schools, and we spend more for that than we do roads and bridges, and more for that than Social Security and so on. Yeah, we're right into this thing called called war. And Einstein was, you know, a pretty smart guy. I guess he had letters after his name, and he said, you can't prepare for war and peace at the same time. And I think that's a pretty logical conclusion. Now, we've been preparing for war, but we don't have any peace. We've got lots of war. We prepare for war. We've got plenty of war. We don't have much peace. War is a series of catastrophes that results in a victory. That's George Clemenceau. War is much too serious a matter to be entrusted to the military. That was George Clemenceau. And you can no more win a war than you can win an earthquake. Janet Rankin. Win a war. You know, let's think about that for a second. We won World War II, didn't we? Didn't America come out victorious in World War II? Excuse me. And now our enemies, the Japanese, hold $760 billion worth of American bonds. And the Germans, didn't they lose World War II? And then the Americans went over there with the Marshall Plan and paid tribute to the defeated Axis powers and rebuilt Europe. And excuse me, isn't it the euro now that is the dominant currency in the world, and the dollar is on its way down and out? I just thought I'd share that with you. Because, you know, they keep telling us, hey, well, you won the Cold War. You know, you won that conflict, you know, with the Russians. Well, excuse me, but when this conflict began back in the 1840s, 1848, with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we got involved in an ideological struggle with the forces of the underworld, the communists, you remember that story, which later developed into the Cold War. That was the period of a lot of little hot wars all over the world, and a lot of intrigue and CIA and all this kind of thing, you know, going on. We called that the Cold War, started about 1946. And I think it was Winston Churchill came over here to the United States and described an iron curtain has been rung down over Europe. Churchill was pretty good with words, and that kind of caught on, you know, the iron curtain. And we went through that Cold War. Now, the Cold War ended about 1990. You remember that? All right. Now, let me ask you this. When we started this contest back in 1848, did we have an income tax here in the United States? And the answer to that is no, we didn't. And now let me ask you, do we have an income tax in the United States today? And the answer is yes, we do. Okay. So we Americans have adopted the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Let me ask you this. Have the communists in Russia or China adopted any of the Ten Commandments or any of the principles of our Bill of Rights? Can you name one? Have they adopted privacy? Maybe just weights and balances? Maybe thou shalt not steal? Maybe thou shalt, you know, anything you can think of? Okay, now, when we started this contest, we didn't have a central bank. Do we have a central bank today? Well, that's called the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. So we Americans have adopted the communist fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Can you point to a reciprocal? Did the communists adopt anything from the Ten Commandments, or did they adopt anything from our Bill of Rights? Can you think of one? Send me an email, would you? Let me know. Tell me. What was it? And then the eighth plank calls for the industrial army, the Social Security program, the National Industrial Army. We've adopted Social Security, the National Industrial Army. Can you point to anything that the communists have adopted from the Ten Commandments or from the Bill of Rights? And then, do you remember public school? That's the tenth plank. You know, free education for all children in public school. Can you find that in our Constitution anywhere or in our Bill of Rights? Free education for all children in public school. That comes from the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto. We've adopted it. Boys and girls, we have adopted all ten planks to the Communist Manifesto. The communists have not adopted one of the Ten Commandments and not one of the Bill of Rights. Nothing. And you're telling me that the Americans won the Cold War? Have we taken leave of our senses? Have we grown up to be totally stupid? And then you wonder why we have war. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here before we get off on a terminal stupids here. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about war and why we have so much of it. Well, you get what you pay for. You pay for a lot of war, you get a lot of war. Now, there are several war chapters in the Bible. If you're interested in these chapters, be sure to write these down. Get your pen and paper out here. Let me give them to you. Matthew 24 is a war chapter. Jesus was asked very plainly by his disciples, tell us what it's going to be like just prior to your second coming. And so in Matthew 24, he spelled it out for them in spades. He said, you're going to have wars and rumors of wars. No peace, just wars and rumors of wars. Mark 13 and Luke 21 also tell you more to the story. Those three chapters, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke chapter 21, three war chapters. And you get two more in the Old Testament, Leviticus 26 rather than Deuteronomy 28, five chapters in all. Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. I guess I ought to give you a sixth chapter over here called Revelation 6. That's also a war chapter. In fact, I'm going to flip over here to Revelation chapter 6. That's where those four horsemen of the apocalypse come in. Well, this is kind of a scary story here. And the second seal, which is a correlation to Matthew 24, he says, and when I had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, come and see. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. Now, you know, people talk about the Bible and Jesus and religion. And religious guys, they talk a lot about peace all the time. I didn't see that. My granny, she was really down on the Bible. She was down on God. She was down on the Bible. She said, that's a bloody book. It's a bloody book. Sound like an Englishman. Bloody. And I mentioned to you that the Israelis over in Israel are doomed to destruction. And they're doomed to destruction because they don't have the stomach for war that is needed to bring peace. So they talk about, we want peace, we want peace. We've got this two-state program. The Arabs don't want peace. The Arabs want war. I mean, you Israelis haven't figured that out yet. You will. You'll figure it out when you're taken into national captivity. I don't think those Arabs like us. Now, you've done evil in the sight of your God. You Americans, you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders, you know, you've done evil in the sight of the Eternal. And the results of that is war. Now, you're just getting leaned on right now. In Leviticus 26, he comes to you and he says, now, you know, I'm going to lean on you a little bit, and if you'll be reformed by this, I'll back off. But if you won't be reformed by this, then I'm going to punish you 7 times more for your sins. Sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. Sin is the violation of the rules. You got certain rules, you know, like thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery and you shall have no other gods before me. Hey, listen, you can't serve two masters, children. And Jesus told you that. That was in Matthew 6, verse 24. Jot that down. Matthew 6, 24. You can't serve two masters. You'll either hold to the one, hate the other, or vice versa. Now, of course, Mormons are a little different. They got two. They got the church, number one. They tithe to the church, and then they pay their tax to the state. Kids, you owe one or the other. You know, you owe the tax, or you owe the tithe, but you don't owe both. Well, you know, assuming that you believe God, who said, you know, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. Now God, you know, Jesus, you know, sweet Jesus over here, you know, he told you pretty plainly over here that he didn't come to send peace on earth. Did you know that? I think that's over here in Matthew chapter 11. Let me see if that's anywhere near correct. I got it written down here in my notes, but yeah, here it is. It's in Matthew chapter 11, verse 34. If you got a Bible, why don't you flip over there? If you don't have it right in front of you, just jot it down. You can check up on me and see if I'm lying to you. Matthew 11, verse 34. He said, think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I come not to send peace, but a sword. Did you ever hear that before? Did you ever hear about sweet Jesus? Let me read that to you again. You probably went right over your head. Religious people, they don't understand this. See, I think it was Adolf Hitler. He came up with a neat idea. One day he said, if you tell a lie over and over and over and over, you know, often enough, people will believe it. He didn't get that directly from his own observations. He stole that. He did it from, I think he stole it from Pope Clement II, about 1100 A.D. And then it was Clement that said, you give me a child until he's 7 years old, and he'll be a Catholic for life. So what happens to Christians is, see, they put them in these, they institutionalize them right out of the chute. And here in the United States, we institutionalize children right out of the chute at age 6. They want to institutionalize them a little earlier than that now. They want to get them into preschool, kindergarten and preschool. They want to get them away from the influence of their parents as soon as possible, so that they can brainwash them. That's what the Catholics learned. See? Brainwashing. Well, we call it education in this country. Get them away from their parents. And so when you do that, you institutionalize these people, and then you tell them over and over and over again, Jesus, the King of Peace. Jesus, the King of Peace. Jesus, the King of Peace. Jesus wants peace. Jesus brings you peace. Jesus has all this peace, and pretty soon you believe that crap. So I just thought I'd tell you, Jesus is meaner than a junkyard dog. He did not come to send peace on earth. He told you plainly, don't think that. In Matthew 5:17, he said, think not that I have come to destroy the law. And so the Christians go to church and they tell them, Jesus abolished the law. Jesus did away with the law. Jesus nailed the law to the cross. You're no longer under the law. See? And you people believe that. And that's because you believe Jesus was a liar. Nobody believes a word that came out of Jesus' mouth. And if they do, would you please write me a letter and tell me what was it that any Christian ever believed that Jesus told them? Because I'm at a total loss. I can't find anything. He said, don't think that I've come to destroy the law. And so they all believe he came to destroy the law. And so now you can go out and dink around, you know, with your neighbor's wife. And that's all right. He understands that you're in love with her. Then he comes over here in Matthew 11:34. He says, think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I came to not to send peace, but a sword. I am come to set a man at variance against his father, the daughter against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loves his father or mother more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that takes not his cross and follows after me isn't worthy of me, and he that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. Right, so now that kind of tells you where it's at. Now in Luke 6:46, I'll tell you another part of the story. You know, people are always talking about Jesus. 65% of Americans, I don't know about you Canadians and Australians, but you know, here in America, we're religious guys. I mean, we take this religion thing real, real serious. 65% of us go to church every Sunday. 65% of us go to church every Sunday. Then over in Kansas the other day, they had a vote, and it was on a school board. And there was a slate of candidates on the school board that had thrown evolution out, or if they hadn't thrown evolution out, they brought special creation into the public school. So they had an election. And they took the whole slate of special creation candidates and voted them out. And voted in the evolution guys, the science guys, you know, the people that believe in science and don't believe in the Bible and Revelation. And they did the same thing up in Pennsylvania not too long ago. There was a school board election up there, and so the people voted out the special creation. We're not going to have any special creation taught in school. We're not going to have Genesis 1, 2, and 3 taught in our public schools. We're going to have total separation of church and state. And so Jesus over in Luke 6:46, he said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Why do you call me Lord and God and Jesus and pray to me and give me all this adulation, and you don't do a damn thing I tell you? Can you figure that out? I don't know. It's a mystery to me. See, I can understand evolutionists voting the creation guys out. And I can understand scientists and politicians and others, you know, that don't go to church. But my God, 65%, boys and girls, of Americans are religious, and they claim to follow Jesus, and they go to church every Sunday. Now, you'd think those religious guys would be on God's side, and they'd want to bring in a little Genesis 1, 2, and 3, just to spice things up a little bit, you know, stir up a little hate and discontent, if nothing else. No, sirree, Bob. We're united by God in this country. We're not going to have any God in our classrooms. We're going to have sex education, though. We're going to teach our daughters to be whores and our sons to be sodomites, and we call that in this country alternative lifestyle. And then we wonder why we have war, or why that war over in Iraq ain't going too good. Children, you know, the book of Judges is a bloody book, and it's a book about our ancestors, and it's a book that tells us a little story. You want peace? Peace comes from God. You want war? War comes from that same God. He says he's a man of war. And he's got six chapters here, five specific war chapters, but Revelation 6 is a prophetic war chapter. He says, now you're going to get more of it. See, this big war that he's talking about in Revelation 6 ain't happened yet, but it's coming. And Americans and Canadians, Australians and New Zealanders are going to get their comeuppance. And you Israelis are going to get your comeuppance. Now that's the bottom line. That's the bad news. Now, this same God now, he was a pretty good guy, and he was working for us at one time. Let me tell you this little story over here. In Leviticus 26, he tells you a little story here about war and peace. Starting off here in Leviticus 26, you know, he says, if you walk in my statutes, this is verse 3 now, he says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them. I mean, if you practice the Ten Commandments, if you walk in my statutes and ordinances, then here's what I'm going to do for you. But, you know, we're practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And he didn't say anything about the manifesto here. He didn't say, if you walk in the principles of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, here's what I'm going to do for you. I think he was referring to the Ten Commandments, children. Now, that's just my opinion, but you read it for yourself, and then you draw your own conclusion. But over here in verse 6, he says, I'll give you peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I'll rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. There'll be no war going through here. Hey, now you Israelis, you got 200 of these Hezbollah rockets dropping on you every day. What do you think of that? Hey, you Americans, you got three of your sons dying over there in Iraq every day. The war's turning to, you know what, in short order. Hey, what do you think's going on over there? What happened to your God? This God. Now, let me tell you about this guy. In verse 7, he says, you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. 5 of you shall chase 100. 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. That's why those Hezbollah Arabs over there are sitting there saying, you know, if we can just stand up to these Israelites, we'll call that a victory. See, time was when we used to go out there and kick hiney and walk off the battlefield with total victory. Things are changing. And the book of Judges explains that to you in spades. You get 40 years of oppression, war, and then 80 years of peace. You get 40 years more of oppression and war, and then you get 80 years of peace. Hey, we're not getting any peace at all. We're just getting more war, and that's because we're getting worse and worse. So I thought that maybe instead of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we might substitute a couple or three of the 10 commandments. I mean, you know, pick out two or three. Anything's better than nothing. And I think maybe we'll do a little better. All right, now I told you about war as a racket. Remember old Smedley Butler over here? Now he said, hey, this war is a racket, and it's a racket because you can only get 6% in the United States, but you can get 100% in Iraq. And listen, you just go ask Halliburton and Bechtel. They'll tell you that the money's in Iraq. That's where you want to be. I told you that Israel, the little country of Israel over there, is doomed to destruction. Very simple. You've got these enemies over there, and they want to destroy you. And you, conversely, don't want to destroy them. Now, let me share something with you. When God finished with the Egyptians in the Red Sea, there were no survivors. Did you get that? No survivor. When God got through with Jericho, there were a few survivors, Rahab and her family. That was it. And then he put them to the sword. And he not only put them to the sword, he killed all the men, the women, and the children, all the dogs, cats, pigs, chickens, cows, sheep, and goats. There was nothing left. Joe Stalin called it the scorched earth policy. I don't know where he learned that. But the guy that practiced scorched earth first was the God of Abraham. That's the first scorched earth policy. If you Israelis were practicing the law of God, let me tell you how that war in Lebanon would be running right now. The Hezbollah guys would come over on your side and they would steal, they'd kill one of your soldiers and steal two. and you would attack southern Lebanon and drive a spear right straight up to that river, the Lani River, and then spread in both directions and cut off your enemy so that there was no escape. Seal off the border with Syria, and then start working on everything that lives, breathes, would die. And when you got through, there would be no old women or little babies. There would be no men, women, or children left alive. There would be no dogs, cats, chickens, pigs, cattle, sheep, or goats left alive in that period over that geographical area. That's called genocide. And I wanted to report to you that the God of Abraham is a genocidal maniac. No doubt about it. And in fact, as you go through, and then I asked the question when I started this program, I said, if God was sitting in the White House instead of George Bush, how would he be conducting our foreign policy? How would he be conducting the war in Iraq? Boy, I'm telling you, you Iraqis over there ought to thank God every night when you go to bed that the God of Abraham is not sitting in the White House and that you have George Bush there. And you know, you Hezbollah guys and all of you Arabs over there, you should thank Allah. You should thank your God every night that you've got that Jewish guy Ehud over there. Is that his name? Or Olmert, I guess is his name, in office instead of Joshua. Because if Joshua or if any man like Ehud, representing the God of Jacob, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were sitting in Tel Aviv in that office, there wouldn't be a single Palestinian left alive on the West Bank. There might be a few Palestinians who escaped from the West Bank into Jordan. There might be a few Palestinians who would have escaped from Gaza into Egypt, but there wouldn't be a cow left alive in Gaza. There wouldn't be a goat. There wouldn't be a sheep. There wouldn't be a chicken. There wouldn't be a baby, a man, a woman, a child left alive in Gaza if the God of Abraham was sitting in Tel Aviv today. And I'm telling you, it would have been a past tense issue. More on this next time. Hey, I got to remind you that I've gotten several requests from Austin, Texas. And I've had a number of inquiries about conducting a tax and status school down in Austin, Texas. So if you're one of those, or if you would entertain the idea, why don't you call us here at the law school and ask us what the date and time is? Probably in September, October. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or send an email to George Gordon. Go to georgegordon.org and click onto the email. Hey, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here next time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, talking about war. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.